turn to 1 Corinthians 16. Hospitality is an interesting subject, and I can't remember if I've ever heard a series of sermons or Sunday school lessons on the topic of Christian hospitality. We probably are aware in the back of our minds, because most of us grew up in church, of Sunday school lessons where we heard the stories of the Old Testament and the story where Abraham prepared the kid from his flock for the visitors who came to his house. And we might have in the back of our mind this vague understanding that in the Old Testament, the Hebrews practiced hospitality. So if you came to their tent or you came to their home, there was this expectation they would take you in. Just like, for example, Sodom and Gomorrah, a terrible city, but the angels came and Lot takes them right into his home. Abraham was the same way. You look at all the wanderings of the patriarchs, and their attitude was, if you're a stranger passing through, we open up our tent flap for you to come in and enjoy our hospitality. Sometimes, though, we kind of get even more fuzzy when we get to the New Testament. What are the commands of God concerning Christian hospitality in the New Testament? We have grown up, and I personally, as you well know, I've been in church before I was born, been in a number of good churches. We have programs that focus on different needs, evangelistic needs, ladies' program, men's program. And sometimes, in my opinion, the tendency is to rely on those programs so much that we tend to forget about basic Christian hospitality. And we forget that it is everywhere in the New Testament. Are you aware that early Christians were known by their hospitality? In the beginning of this book, and by the way, our lessons that we're going through the next few weeks are from this book. If you'd like me to order you a copy, I'd be glad to. It's called The Hospitality Commands by Alexander Strouch. He's the same man who wrote the sort of definitive work on biblical elders. He points out as the sad incident of a woman who, an elderly single woman, who now attends our church, this is him writing, related an experience to me that dramatically illustrates why we need fresh teaching on the subject of Christian hospitality. At one time in her life, she had to travel more than an hour by bus every Sunday to attend a small suburban church. Each week after the Sunday morning service, she would eat alone in a restaurant and then spend the entire afternoon in a park or library so that she could attend the evening service. She did this for 4 years. What left her with sour memories of this church was the fact that in 4 years, no one invited her home to eat a Sunday afternoon meal or to rest. It wasn't until she announced she was leaving that an elderly woman in the church invited her home for a meal on her final Sunday. He goes on to say that early Christians, contrary to that, were known as being hospitable. He quotes one man, a church historian, in saying, during the early centuries of Christianity, it was the Roman church more than any other which was distinguished by the generosity with which it practiced this virtue, hospitality. A living interest in the collective church of Christ throbbed with a peculiar vigor throughout the Roman church, and the practice of hospitality was one of its manifestations. So his point is that it's practically a forgotten art in the Christian church, at least in his experience. And I have to say that I've experienced it as well. Now, this series of lessons, I'm not preaching it and teaching it because I think we're all guilty of being inhospitable. My only goal of bringing this up is because I've never heard it done before. And I think our church should continue with a burden to be hospitable, because guess what? We don't have the big programs right now, do we? We don't have a giant program, and Awana is our most well-organized program right now, and the ladies' program is very well-organized. So hospitality is a way where we don't need a program. It's spontaneous. It's easy. It's something that we can all do. It doesn't matter what station in life we're in. Of course, at different times of life, it's more difficult if you have kids or your health is failing. It's just something that we could do. And I think it's made a big difference. I don't think, well, I was going to use a living illustration to tell you about how hospitality made the difference in the life of someone who now is a member of our church. But this individual came, and the very first Sunday he came, he was invited to someone's house. And I know that that hospitality affected his choice to make this his church home. Hospitality is just that important. So what we're going to do tonight is simply build the case for some of the pillars of Christian hospitality. In this book, the author goes on to sort of undergird the idea of hospitality and give it a context. And the first place he goes is the whole idea of the Christian family. Now, you and I know that there are many illustrations in the New Testament or analogies about what the Christian church is. Can someone tell me one other than the family? What is the church compared to in the New Testament? I'll give you one. The body of Christ. There's an easy one. What else? The temple or the pillar and ground of the truth? The temple in what sense? Built together living stones. Ah, yeah, that's a good one too. Yep. And then Christ is the cornerstone. He was rejected, but he is the cornerstone of what we believe. Good. Okay, anybody else know one? John? The bride of Christ, that's an excellent one. The flock of Jesus said he had a flock, and then he had another one, and he was referring to the Gentiles, and they would both become one flock. Yeah. Anybody else? Good. Getting more than I thought you would. Okay. Now, each one of those analogies are pretty much limited to their context. They are not at least repeated. I'll say this. They are not repeated as much as the analogy of family. We know that because in many of the epistles, Christians are referred to as what? Brothers and sisters. It was a common thing for them to call each other brothers and sisters. In many practical ways, the local church in the New Testament shows itself to be a close-knit family of brothers and sisters. I want you to look at, if you look down at your sheet, I've got a number of bullet points, and I did not fill in all the texts there, all the Bible verses that support these points. And if you want all of them, I can give them to you later. But if you look at these points, you'll notice, I'll just kind of go through them quickly to build the idea of family affection and love. First, we know that Christians greeted one another with a holy kiss. Now, this kiss was a sign of affection, of just love for one another. We also know that they shared their material possessions. Can someone tell me where that took place? Right. Okay. So in the book of Acts, they sold their possessions to meet needs. They also met in homes. Now, they did this primarily at the beginning because that's all they had. Okay. But still, I think there is something to this idea of meeting in homes. Because at the very beginning, they didn't just meet on Sunday. They met throughout the week as well. They loved being around one another. You didn't have to force them to go to church because to them, church was family, and family were people you wanted to be around. They ate together. They often did this, not just the Lord's table, but at other times as well. They cared for their widows. In other words, they cared for their own as a family. They disciplined their members. Just like parents have to at times discipline their children, the church as a family disciplines members. And brotherliness provided the guiding principle of conduct between members. All right, what does that mean? Well, that means that that the young men were to handle their relationships with the young ladies with purity, as a brother would a sister. Okay, now, of course, if they wanted to marry one of them, that's fine. I mean, it's not a literal brother or sister where you wouldn't want to marry, but you get the point. There was this purity, this brotherliness, this family kind of thing where they tried to show each other kindness and love. And it's within the context of the Christian family that they showed hospitality to one another. Now, this is where I'm going to ask you to turn to some of these passages. Open your Bible first to Acts 16:15. And if I could get someone to stand up and read that fairly loudly, that would be great. Acts 16:15. Thanks, Dale. Go ahead.
And when she was baptized in her household, she besought us, saying, if we have if ye have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and abide there, and she constrained us.
All right, thank you. The context here is Lydia, the seller of purple. She's there and she is hearing the gospel message. She responds, she's baptized, and there's this immediate call where she wants to be hospitable and invite the apostles into her home. And she prevailed. That's the idea of constrained. I mean, she really, sometimes I want to do this with people. You're going to come to my house for lunch. I'm not taking no for an answer. I want to show you hospitality. That's sort of what this is what's happening here. And it's just this great love that she had. And so they allowed themselves to be constrained and to go. Look at chapter 21, verse 8. Acts 21, verse 8. And the next day we that were of Paul's company departed and came unto Caesarea. And we entered into the house of Philip the evangelist, which was one of the seven, and abode with him. Now here you have this band of missionaries, and they're traveling through their adventures, and they get to this area, and look, Philip lives there. And Philip's response is, come on in, spend time with me. You can stay at my house. And by this, these two texts certainly show us that hospitality extends beyond just a meal or a pat on the back. They stayed with these people. They boarded them, so to speak. They let them stay at their houses and took care of them. Now look down at verse 16. There went with us also certain of the disciples of Caesarea, and brought with them one Mnason of Cyprus, an old disciple with whom we should lodge. Again, they're going from place to place, and they have somewhere to stay. It's just mentioned in the text, almost an expected thing. Turn now to Romans chapter 12. Romans 12, verse 13. Now, this verse is kind of tucked away in a series of exhortations, but it definitely has a broader context in Romans 12 of relationships, using your gifts. You look up at verse 7, someone who has the gift of ministry should wait on our ministering. He that teaches on teaching, he that exhorteth on exhortation. If you give, do it with simplicity. If you rule, do it with diligence. If you have mercy, show it with cheerfulness. And then he kind of backs away from the particular gifts and speaks of broader Christian character traits or virtues. We call them Christian virtues. Verse 9, let love be without dissimulation. Abhor what's evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. So there it is, tucked away in that series of exhortations. They should be given to hospitality. Now, what kind of a giver does the Lord like? A cheerful giver, right? So our attitude when we have an opportunity to be hospitable should be cheerful and joyful that we have that opportunity. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2. Here we have the qualifications for the elder, and the very same phrase is used, given to hospitality. 1 Timothy 3, verse 2, a bishop, which is really the word overseer, then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach. Look over at chapter 5 of 1 Timothy, verse 9. Let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works. If she have brought up children, if she's lodged strangers, if she's washed the saints' feet, if she's relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. Now, those are very high qualifications for a widow. And I want us to understand The context, of course, is a widow who's taken into the church. She can't support herself. She'd be destitute. She doesn't have family who can help her. We really don't have anyone in the church right now that's a widow that fits these qualifications of need, of necessity. Now imagine this. There's a widow that's destitute in your church, and they won't take her on the roll because she hasn't done verse 10. She's not well reported of good works. You know how hard that would be for a church to have to do that? I've never in my lifetime heard of a widow who's been told no. And yet here, just like we have qualifications for elders and deacons, we have qualifications for widows that we should support and widows that we shouldn't if there's a need. That would be very hard for me to have to say no to someone. But right in the middle of the verse, she's lodged strangers. And here we start to begin to build a definition of hospitality. Lodging strangers, taking in people that you don't really know. Now, does that mean you just, not everybody that knocks on your door, you let them into your house? I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that from this passage, we begin to understand that it involves sometimes people we don't know. Turn to Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2. Hebrews 13, 2. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers. Thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Now, the King James Version uses the word entertain. I don't think that this means that we're supposed to get out our video game system and make sure we let strangers play video games at our house and we play Monopoly with them. And we make sure we have a lot of fun with these strangers. That's not what this is talking about, okay? But it is talking about taking care of them. Receiving is really, receive the stranger. Be willing, don't forget, receive a stranger, for thereby some have received angels unawares. So that's just another command to not forget it. And it's possible sometimes that we can neglect it. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9. Turn there. Now notice we're just going right through your New Testament. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9. Let's pick it up at verse 7. We'll read 7 to 9. The end of all things is at hand. Be therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves. For charity shall cover the multitude of sins. Use hospitality one to another without grudging. As every man has received the gift, even so minister the same one to another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Use hospitality one to another without grudging. Does anyone have another translation of that that's a little more updated that they can just call out? Without grumbling, is it translated use hospitality or a different way? Be hospitable or show hospitality without grumbling. And by that we understand that it's not always easy to be hospitable. It can be costly, time-consuming, and it can often take place when you're really too tired to deal with it. There are times when you know you should be hospitable, but you don't really feel like it, and we could be tempted to grumble about it, so we should avoid that. All right, then finally, 3 John verses 5 to 8. Turn there. 3 John 5 to 8. I used to know a preacher that would preach that way. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 1 and 2 Corinthians. All right, 3 John 5 to 8. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. Because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. All right, who is this talking about, do you think? Who is he saying that they should bring forward on their journey? Sending them forward on their journey, you're doing well. What about verse 7? Who are these people?
The brothers and strangers.
Yeah, they're brothers and strangers. That's true. Yeah, look at verse 8 again. Look at verse 8. Did I read verse 8? We therefore ought to receive such that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. Look at verse 9. I wrote unto the church, but the Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I'll remember his deeds. The problem here is that this is probably a reference to traveling evangelists or missionaries. And the Apostle John wrote an official letter to the church saying, please receive these people. They have my recommendation. Please be hospitable to them. But Diotrephes, how would you like to have your name in the Bible forever because you're not hospitable? He loves to have the preeminence. Ugh. No, I'm not really sure the apostles got it right this time. These guys, you know, John, he's so loving, you know, he just overlooks so many things. I think maybe this time we should just, you know, we don't have time for this. And so he's not very happy. So we're supposed to show hospitality to traveling missionaries. Now this is what's happening. Now let's try to bring this up to speed for us today. There's more that we're going to go over when it comes to hospitality. We're going to close this down in a second. But how would you try to apply this to today? First of all, remember sort of the who it is we show hospitality to. Traveling missionaries that are endorsed by an apostle. Well, we don't have apostles. How would we apply that? Strangers who come into the assembly. Show hospitality to one another, other Christians in the assembly. How could we do this in our church? Any suggestions how to apply it? It's not really that hard. Anybody? 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 Bethany? Okay, she said that if they come to your church and they're a stranger, you can talk to them so they don't feel lonely. That's good. Can you remember in the verses two things, at least two things, that represent hospitality? One of them starts with an L, and one of them starts with, well, there are lots of different words. Let's just pick an F. Feeding and lodging, okay? That's pretty practical. Remember, the widows are supposed to wash the disciples' feet. They're supposed to lodge strangers, okay? So you have someone who comes in. And let's say, and I know you people do this, you have a missionary that comes in, say, like Valerie Gray comes home. And we know she's going to be here on a certain day, and someone in the church takes her into their home and makes sure that she's fed and she has a place to stay. That's not very difficult to understand. There might be other times when someone comes here on a Sunday morning, and we've never met them before in their lives, but they just moved to the area and they're looking for churches. And we say, hey, why don't you come over to our house and we'll feed you some lunch. I have a pastor friend who does this regularly, even after Sunday night service. And he doesn't cook a feast. You go over to his house, you eat hot dogs and baked beans and macaroni and cheese and cheese curls. What? And popcorn. But it's okay. It doesn't have to be a feast. It's the whole idea of showing them concern. So what are we establishing tonight? Well, we're establishing that in the book of Acts, it was a common practice as the apostles traveled and established churches and then went back and met people like Philip the Evangelist. It was a common practice for them not to go to hotels or motels. They didn't do that. They went right into the homes of the people that they had led to the Lord and their fellow workers in Christ. And that is why I'm ashamed when I have to put a missionary in a hotel in our church. It's really not a good thing. Because even with the amount of people we have, and we don't have a lot of people, we should still be able to show them hospitality. And we are. Okay, I'm not saying that a missionary has been in a hotel for a long time now. Secondly, we learn that hospitality is so important that it is flatly commanded to us. We are supposed to be hospitable and do it without grumbling. Just do it. It's a command. It's an imperative. Go out and be hospitable to one another. Thirdly, we know that hospitality is so important that if you're a widow, think about this, you're destitute, and you want to be put on the roll so that the church will pay for your food so that you don't suffer. If you don't have a good report of the brethren, and part of that is the hospitality that you've shown in your life, you may not be able to be put on that roll. Can you imagine that? That's how seriously the New Testament church was to take hospitality. And finally, I think we learn here that from 3 John, if you look down at this, because this is where we are, look down at 3 John, verse 6. It says, "Which have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom thou bring forward, and whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well." This verse begins to indicate that hospitality is an expression of love. Verse 6, "Which have borne witness of thy love before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, you're going to do well. Because that for his name's sake they went forth." These are missionaries of a sort. They've gone forward with a very Christian goal for his name's sake. They didn't take anything from the Gentiles, so we ought to receive them and be fellow helpers of the truth. And Diotrephes in a whole lot of trouble. But this is an expression of your love. And I didn't do that tonight. I mean, I didn't show you that in another passage throughout the New Testament, love is connected very strongly with hospitality. You and I look for expressions of love as Christians, right? We just looked at 1 Corinthians 13 and we saw sort of the characteristics of love. Love is patient and kind and it doesn't think evil and all these things. And that they are very practical. At least you can understand them and you can plug those concepts into relationships. But hospitality is even more hands-on practical. If you're feeding someone a bowl of soup at your house, you're loving them. If you're opening your home up for someone to spend the night, you're loving them. If you are, as Bethany said, speaking to them in church so they won't be lonely and then inviting them over for popcorn and hot dogs, it's just a very practical, down-to-earth way that you and I can love one another. You remember the exhortation that says to be a doer of the word and not a hearer only? And what good does it do if your brother comes to you destitute and you say, "Be warmed and filled"? You don't help him. And in this book, he mentions that in the first years of the church and in the first century, even after the apostles were dead, this was one of the Christian hallmarks. Christian people were so hospitable that this became their reputation. Wow, those people they're crazy. If you go by and see them, they're going to treat you right. I mean, they'll invite you in, they'll take care of you. And that was one of the marks of being a Christian. And folks, I know that you want that to be one of the marks that we have at Faith Bible Church. When we have folks that come here from all over the world, and we love them enough to take them home, to feed them and care for them, it really has a big impact on them. Wouldn't you agree? Have you seen that happen in your lifetime? Hospitality can really work. And you don't need a church program. You don't need a director of hospitality. You don't need a secretary for hospitality, a vice president for hospitality, and a committee for hospitality. All you need is your family and an extra pot of soup on the stove. That's it. It's so cheap in that sense. I know it costs money to feed other mouths, but... So the exhortation tonight is, let's see, as we continue to journey through the Bible and look at this idea of hospitality, if the Lord will give us opportunities for it, even while we're talking about it in church. Maybe next Sunday, someone will come along and the Lord will lay it on your heart. You know, I'm going to take that. I'm going to see if that person wants to go out to lunch. Or I'm going to invite them over to my house this week and see what God will do. You might be amazed at what God does.